From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today we bring you excerpts from the weekly press conference at the Russian Foreign Ministry by spokesperson Maria Zakharova.
We receive a large number of questions concerning, once again, the increased flood of news concerning the situation in the Persian Gulf. Due to the U.S. escalation in the region, we are concerned about the escalation of the conflict potential in the Persian Gulf. The current events are approaching a dangerous line, which could lead to a large-scale military conflict. The United States of America is trying to escalate the situation by organizing, in fact, a pirate capture of the tanker in the strait in order to expand the U.S. military presence in the region under the pretext of defending the freedom of navigation. At the same time, they try to involve other countries in their provocative schemes, even the countries located far away from the region. They are trying to establish a so-called maritime coalition. This is a favorable trick of the recent years, to establish coalitions based not on the international law, but rather the establishment of so-called coalitions whose authorities are not defined by any laws and do not have any legitimate platforms. They only act based on the sole interests of a certain group of states. So this so-called maritime coalition is meant not to maintain peace, but rather to maintain forcible pressure on Iran. The first fiddle, once again, is played by the U.S. Let me remind you that before the unilateral withdrawal of the U.S. from the JCPOA on the Iran nuclear program, both the maritime navigation and the oil traffic through the Hormuz Strait was stable. But something went wrong along the way. Let me remind you that there is no necessary of establishing any coalitions for maintaining security until the U.S. started to artificially escalate the tensions. It seems that Washington is only trying to find a pretext to escalate the situation and to continue the aggressive rhetoric against Iran and to transform the situation into a more active conflict phase, guided by the U.S. political interests and calculations in the upcoming phase of the election campaign in the U.S. We believe that this is a negative practice, trying to find the support from the voters, or rather trying to manipulate the mind and the information and therefore influence the political ratings. The authorities are risking the lives of civilians in other countries and in their own country as well, both civilians and the military personnel. By the way, the U.S. allies in these so-called coalitions should better think about the situation. They must realize that they are getting involved as pawns in someone else's game. The current crisis improves the relevancy of finding new ways of long-term stabilization of the region. For many years, we've been proposing a solution in the context of this region. We have developed the concept of collective security in the area of the Persian Gulf. An updated version of the concept was presented on the 23rd of July by the Russian Deputy Foreign Minister, Mr. Mikhail Bogdanov. This initiative is based on the maintenance of international law, multilateracy, and equal participation of all the states of the region. We hope it can find support. And in the context of the current events in the region, we receive numerous questions on the situation around the tanker that had Russian sailors in its crew. We are speaking about the Stena Impera tanker. The Russian embassy in Iran is monitoring the situation around Russian citizens in the British tanker's crew, which is currently anchored in the Bandar Abbas port in Iran. On the 26th of July, the diplomats of the Russian embassy in Iran had a meeting with the sailors. Their health condition is fine. They have all the necessary medication and food. The Iranian authorities have received an address asking to settle the situation around the Russian citizens to make sure they can come back home. This is a priority for us. We will continue solving the situation concerning Russian citizens. Let me underline that this is one of our priorities. Now the situation in Venezuela. We fully support the various efforts to find mutually acceptable ways of settling the situation in the country. Russia is interested in finding a solution to the Venezuelan problem, and we call to refrain on any comments on the goals of the talks in a Norwegian format led between the legitimate Venezuelan authorities and the opposition, as well as refrain from any attempts to influence these talks. Outside pressure on the process does not accelerate it. On the contrary, it sows discontent and mistrust and slows down the negotiation process. Such policy of the US and its allies might undermine direct contacts and result in a new escalation of the crisis, which in turn makes it even harder to solve the conflict in a peaceful way without the use of force. All the members of the global community are responsible for the success of the Venezuelan dialogue or for its undermining. Unfortunately, even the first steps in the negotiation process provoked concerns about the so-called Group of Friends of Venezuelan Democracy. On the 16th of July, the EU representative for foreign policy threatened sanctions if any tangible results are not reached at the negotiations. This is an interesting diplomatic move, saying that if the negotiations are not successful, sanctions would be implemented. These are the new turns in the diplomacy of the European Union. The US Secretary of State on the 19th of July declared that the sole purpose of the talks is only the resignation of Maduro. End of quote. They are saying that they are not talking to find ways of the conflict settlement. They are saying that they need to achieve the goals and tasks stated by a third party, which is most surprising. All of these ultimatums can only be explained by Washington's feeling that a real compromise can be achieved between the participants of the talks, which would play against the interests of the US administration. Apart from the verbal threats and the mentions of the military option, more tangible signals are also sent to Venezuela. The US reconnaissance aircraft continue their flights at the borders of Venezuela. On the 24th of July, the US Finance Ministry included 10 more citizens of Venezuela and Colombia and numerous countries from China, Colombia, Emirates, Panama, and Turkey into their sanction list. This is another example of actual pressure and blackmail. By the way, do you know why these companies from the companies were included on the relevant lists? They were included on the list for purchasing food within the social aid program to the poor in violation of the sanctions. This is how they show their concern for the Venezuelan people. Let me remind you that the well-being of Venezuelan people is the basis for the US involvement in the whole story. Moreover, the Americans continue using double standards, trying to strangle Venezuela in an economic way. In a new step, they introduced sanctions against five Venezuelan oil companies. In such a way, pursuing the policy of unfair competition, the Americans are trying to push other players away from the Venezuelan oil market. They only think about the interests of their own large oil business. This is absolute hypocrisy and double standards, and a violation of all the accepted rules and norms of international relations, which were proposed by the democratic community as the rules for the global play and the game. And most importantly, they are making new concessions for the companies who do not suffer from the excessive finances. They are using them to enrich themselves. But when we're talking about the poor, about the children who urgently require the help since they suffer from cancer and they do not make any concessions for them. You know that we continue monitoring the topic of the falsification and distortion of history, in particular history of World War II. That is why we cannot ignore the blatant facts, numerous facts. We are talking about the publishing in another European Union country of the work, if I may say so, or the anti-work, if I could say so, the Mein Kampf. Let me remind you, for those who are not aware, this is a work of Adolf Hitler. We took note of the information that the Mein Kampf book banned in Russia by Adolf Hitler would be reprinted in Estonia in August this year. The first printed edition by Matrix Publishing was fully sold in Estonia. The Matrix Publishing was notorious for the publishings of scandalous authors. In particular, it was publishing books by Estonian Nazi supporters and their current modern followers. In the recent years, we see new scandal around this book around in Europe and in Estonia, and in 2016 a book was published in Germany with new comments by the German Institute, and 85,000 copies were sold instead of the original 4,000. At the same year, an Italian El Giornale newspaper published the first volume of the book as a free addendum to the newspaper.
In 2018, it was available in the Netherlands after several years ban of selling this book in the country. And in 2020, the French translation will be published. One of Warsaw theaters made a performance, despite it was prohibited in Poland, and it was made based on this book. I think that everyone forgot what this book looks like. Mein Kampf is a military-oriented, man-hateful book which outlined the ideas of Hitler's future crimes. And Nazis' crimes and the terror was announced as a legal method of political fight. It was stipulated in this way in the book. In Russia, it is one of the extremist books, and it is banned to publish and the reprint of this very text, although with the critical comments by historians, risks to be an ideological bomb and being amid frequent attempts to revise the results of the Second World War and rehabilitate the fascist collaborators and spread neo-Nazism, racism, and xenophobia in Europe. In Estonia, the situation becomes even worse since the book is published without finding aid or censorship. Apart from Matrix Publishing book, the Estonian bookshelves were hit by a comic strip, and it's called Hipster Hitler. The comic strip makes fun over such awful and dire topics as Holocaust and aggression against the Soviet Union, and there are media in Estonia that take active efforts to rehabilitate Hitler supporters, including Culture and Life magazine, which explicitly popularizes Estonian SS units and the period of the German occupation between 1941 and 1944. The spread of such literature is not the only sign of the critical level of neo-Nazi sentiment in Estonia. On the 27th of July, those who admire SS activities in cinema met, as they usually do, and there was a fun fair that sold the products with Nazi symbols. And amid that, war criminals are rehabilitated, and the memorials to the victims of Holocaust and Soviet liberator servicemen are desecrated. And we still hope that there are many structures and bodies in Europe, including the OSCE, EU, and the UN, will finally pay close attention to this dangerous situation and influence Tallinn. And we hope that the Estonian civil society will counter the situation when their country is turning into a stronghold of neo-fascism in Europe. And to those who are engaged in promoting the cannibal ideology condemned by the Nuremberg Tribunal, just to score political points, should be ashamed, since there are many descendants of Estonians who defended and liberated the homeland from the fascist invaders. We have also noted today's publication, and I'm referring to the British newspapers that contained references to the military of the UK about creating special cyber units that conduct offensives in the cyberspace. I'm referring to the Daily Telegraph, and it says about the need to repel, including threats from Russia. And the Times, for example, says directly that these units will conduct cyber attacks and spread disinformation. The end of quote. So it's not just anti-Russian hysteria that hit the record high, and its de facto recognition of aggressive UK's intentions in the cybersphere. It's surprising that only a month has passed since the UK organized the Global Conference on the Freedom of Media, and the British authorities now reveal their true intentions, and they are to manipulate information for the military and political purposes, including in the cybersphere. We will still keep track of the topic and return to it in detail. It's just our first response. And now I would like to say a few words about a topic which is of great interest to us. Indeed, it's the international approaches to the problems of artificial intelligence. So between the 11th and 12th of July, the UNESCO headquarters hosted the World Conference on the Artificial Intelligence, organized by Information for All program and the French University Paris Sud, and Russia was a partner of the conference. A big range of international institutions was involved in the conference, including WIPO, ILO, the EU, the World Bank, ITU, OECD, and experts. They were predominantly Western speakers, and other regions were presented only by Brazil, Taiwan, and Japan. The event practically went beyond the frameworks of narrow and quite specialized topics, which are the impact digitalization has on the labor market, and participants' reports addressed many aspects, including educational, ethical, economic, and many others. By and large, the conference confirmed UNESCO's intention to take the lead in formulating the regulatory basis in the sphere. In general, the event looked like an exchange of views on quite a topical, new, dynamically developing topic. No follow-up documents were adopted, and at the plenary meeting of the conference, the director of the Computational Science and Engineering Center of the Skolkovo Institute of Science and Technology, who participates in formulating the national strategy of Russia on artificial intelligence, delivered a report on our country's approaches to these problems. And he made an emphasis on the need to pay special attention to humans' role in the aspects of artificial intelligence and the need to formulate international ethical frameworks and the need to coordinate interstate approaches to elaborate common policy in the sphere of artificial intelligence. So, and I would like to comment on what work is being done on national platforms right now. And now, you know, you've probably noticed that we commented on the statement made by ministers of foreign affairs of different countries in relation to Russia's internal situation. Over the past week, there were quite many. It is surprising how sensitive our foreign colleagues are in relation to the internal affairs of Russia. They expressed their concerns with the electoral process in Russia, and we commented on the events that take place in Russia through our embassies abroad, and we'll do the same in the future. We'll make explanations, and we try to make them as easy and comfortable as possible with videos and photographs, and we call on them to pay more attention to their own internal policy. And we know that there are principles of non-interference into the internal affairs of other countries, which our Western colleagues forget about, and we try to remind that the international law requires to refrain from any comments or actions that can be interpreted as interference, and seizing the opportunity. And I would like to say that a number of ministers of foreign affairs stepped in, and I would like to explain certain legal aspects of electoral processes to our foreign colleagues. I would like to say that before making clumsy statements that are far from reality, you should remember, since we're talking about international relations, so you should remind of the international documents that were adopted by these countries and that these countries participated in formulating. According to Article 19 of the International Pact of Civil and Political Rights, says that the freedom of expression and speech stipulates certain obligations and liabilities, and it can be accompanied by certain limitations which should be fixed in the law and be necessary for the protection of state security and civil order, health, or the moral state of the population. It's not the Russian legislation that I have quoted, but the International Pact on Political and Civil Rights. Article 21 of this very pact about the peaceful assemblies stipulates that certain limitations can take place in the interest of a state or civil order, the protection of health and moral state, or the protection of rights and freedoms of certain individuals. The same provisions are fixed in Article 10, Article 11, and the European Convention on the Rights of Individuals. And there can be another provisions that say about the prevention of unrest. So for our partners from the West, I would like to say that the procedure of the realization of the right for peaceful assemblies stipulated in the federal law on assemblies and rallies of the 19th of July 2014, and the provisions fully comply with the agreements and conventions that I have just mentioned. It is strange to hear the rebukes from such countries as the US, the UK, France and Germany, where the authorities feverishly lambast the media and certain individuals, and we can hardly say about the proportionality of the actions when we see how the rallies are dispersed in London, in Ferguson, in Frankfurt and many other cities. So these are the countries that teach us what to do. I would like to say a few words about our plans for August. There are going to be several field events, and we're going to invite you to participate in them. One of our tasks is to invite you to certain interesting fora that take place in Russia and to draw your attention to marvelous and wonderful places where they are held. So our next briefing will take place on the 9th of August, on Friday, in one of Russia's regions, which is a usual thing. And we haven't held briefings in Moscow region, and now we will do that. We will meet in Solnechnogorsk, near a picturesque lake of Sinish. All Russia Youth Educational Forum Teresianse will take place there between the 5th of July and the 20th of August, and the briefing will take place there. It's a unique a creative workshop and communication platform that gives young people from Russia an opportunity to turn life for the better and participate in the changes. So it gives them an opportunity to unleash their creative potential and find an application in different spheres of our life, as well as to present their own developments and projects. I would like to remind you that Teresianse is an educational forum, and participants can have a direct dialogue with the leading politicians and business leaders, cultural figures and academics. They can get a fair view of the current state of affairs in our country and objective assessments. They can ask questions and receive answers. So I invite everyone to our briefing in Solnechnogorsk. I hope you will like it. So see you soon there. But that's not the end, and I'm ready to answer your questions if there are any. Yes, please. Anna Usanova, Information Agency Moscow, Baku. There are tensions in Nagorno-Karabakh area. Ceasefire regime is frequently violated. You know that there have been the injured and the deceased on both sides. Yesterday, the Azerbaijani border serviceman was injured. Is Russia and other OSCE countries going to take any steps? Yes, we are really concerned with the tensions in the on the border, and we express our condolences with the family and the next of kin of the deceased. And the increase in tensions is going counter the recently agreed ceasefire regime and the arrangements on arranging the situation using diplomatic means, and we call on the stakeholders to refrain from the use of force, show restraint, and take measures to stabilize the situation.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.